Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of This Dude Started Something. We took a little break, but we're officially back with a very exciting guest.
Today's guest is a professional photographer whose work has been seen by millions. He's traveled the world capturing insane shots, and here's the crazy part. When he's not behind the lens, he's working at Google.
If AI ever tries to replace photographers, this guy's the final boss. Me, Arvin Krishnaswamy. How you doing, Art?
All right. I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, to start off, I want to touch on like photography, obviously. And we also mentioned that you work at Google, which is very intriguing to us.
You still work at Google?
I do. Yeah, I was just there today.
Perfect. All right.
So it's like photography on the weekends, Google during the week type schedule you got going?
No, it's pretty much, I work at Google to fund my photography. So, you know, photography is the passion. Really? That's the thing I love doing. You know, I like building products too, but, whether it's weekends, vacations, photo trips, that's what it's really about.
Have you worked on Nano Banana at all?
I have not worked on Nano Banana. I have used Nano Banana, but, no, I haven't worked on it.
Well, actually, Braden, we should start with, in the past few years, like, what do you think about AI pictures as a professional photographer?
Yeah, it's a tool. Yeah, the way I see it, I mean, for me, photography is it's an art. It's a way of communicating. It's a way of evoking emotion. It's a way of being able to have something that gets somebody to feel something that you felt when you were out there, you know, making that photo. And so, whether it's AI, I kind of think of AI the same way that maybe people were asking the same question about Photoshop, 20 years ago, how do you feel about Photoshop, right? I think it's kind of the same thing where it's a tool, and if you can use it to get the outcome that you want, to convey the emotion or, convey whether it's beauty or whatever you're feeling, then, you use it for that. And so I have my own, like me personally as a photographer, I have my own set of rules for the things that I'm willing to do and not do in tools like Photoshop or Lightroom. And I kind of apply the same thing, with AI. So I just look at it the same way.
What are some of those rules?
I'll use AI to kind of reinforce a point. So if I'm taking a photo and like, let's say there's like a distraction in there, or let's say there's something that that's not really the main point. It's not really part of the main composition. And it would just be really hard to otherwise get rid of it, get rid of it when I'm out of the field, or get rid of it just using the tools that I'll have in Photoshop. I might use AI, to go in and be able to clear that out. I'll give you another example. Actually, I used this. I used it recently when Adobe added Generative Expand into Photoshop. I had a photo that I took on a it was a trip to a part of South Africa of this crash of rhino, And it's amazing. And so when you come across rhino, you're like, you're freaking out. You're just trying to like get your camera and you're trying to get the shots, you know, as fast as you can. And I kind of framed it where I was a little too tight on the group of rhino. And I wanted an ultimate image that was going to be a little bit more panoramic with more of the scenery around it. But, you know, I didn't, I didn't have the clarity to think, oh yeah, maybe zoom out and then we'll crop it later. But, I was able to go into Photoshop, take my little bit of a tight image and, you know, get it to generative expand and create more of a panoramic image. Now, in that case, that particular final image, that's only for my purposes. I don't, I typically don't sell those. I don't put those up for licensing, types of things. But I use it. It worked out well for me.
Awesome.
So you're essentially combining real life photos with kind of a little bit of AI editing in there. Do you think, and that's able to convey the same emotions as like a regular raw photo. Do you think a full AI photo will eventually be able to grab people's attention like a natural one?
I'll kind of say two things, right? I think that I'll say never say never, because you never know, right? Like what's going to happen. At the same time, I do use a bunch of the generative AI tools, whether it's, you know, Nano Banana or other things for work. Like if I'm trying to put together a presentation, I want to do a slide deck, right, you know, that sort of thing. And so a lot of the times when I use it, it just doesn't, at least for me, it doesn't evoke the same kind of emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that just even knowing that a photographer went out and they did a bunch of work to capture that image, that's actually the thing that ends up being, you know, satisfying. So mm-hmm. I guess it depends on what the use case is. For example, today I did a presentation, you know, at work, and as a part of that presentation, I had a slide deck and I needed this, you know, this picture. I had this concept, you know, in my mind, and I just needed something just to kind of hold the audience's attention for a little bit while I was there, you know, talking, kind of telling my thing. And for that, an AI image, you know, works great. Mm-hmm. Previously, I might have gone and tried to look in, you know, like Google image search or, you know, go look at stock mm-hmm. photos or things like that. But I didn't need to do that. Like AI worked great. If I'm going to go, or if I'm going to go to like a gallery, if I'm going to go, or even if I'm scrolling on social media and I'm looking at, you know, what people are posting or what people are putting up there, I think I want to see stuff that's made by people. That just seems more interesting to me. So I think that's kind of where I am right now. But, the rate at which things are changing and going, who knows what will happen in the next few years.
That's so true. And the tool you're talking about, are you talking about Gamma to make your slides?
I just use the Google Workspace slides.
Oh, okay.
I still kind of do it from scratch. Yeah.
Okay.
You can't cheat on Google, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's so true. Okay. Going back to the rhinos though, we actually had someone on here. His name's Jeremy Grant, and he protects photographers from polar bears in the Arctic. Do you have protection out there from rhinos?
No, you don't. Usually you don't need it. So the rhinos, we were photographing that in a reserve. So, in Africa, you have your national parks, but then I tend to go to the game reserves. So they're basically just a concession of land. And then usually there's like, a lodge or a place to stay on there. And then, you take the vehicles, you know, that the lodge provides. But you basically work with drivers and guides that are very experienced. They know the behavior of the animal. They'll stay a safe distance away from them. They won't do, like dumb things that end up aggravating them. And as long as you do that, they are basically habituated to treat the vehicles that we're in as neither as something that is a threat, nor is it a food source. So it's just kind of there and they just don't mind. So whether that's rhinos or lions or, you know, leopard or cheetah or elephants or any of those things, you know, as long as you're working with guides who kind of respect the wildlife, kind of maintain that the appropriate distance, don't, you know, aggravate them, you're completely safe.
So do you shoot from the car then, or?
I shoot from a safari vehicle, a game vehicle. So it's basically a modified Toyota or Land Rover. And usually they have, they're usually open top. So there's no roof, there's no windows. And usually when I go, I'll try to have like an entire row to myself. So that we can position the vehicle, you know, with the wildlife either to the right or to the left, and then just shoot right from the vehicle. Sometimes, you know, you will, if they're calm enough, you can, you know, kind of stick yourself out the side of the vehicle, kind of lower your camera to the ground, you know, and fire off shots. You know, done that a few times as well.
Dang, like a drive-by. Shoot, that's crazy, man.
Well, actually, you say drive-by. The Rhino one was interesting because that, so Rhino, because they've been hunted, and poached a lot, they can be very, very skittish. They, they really are kind of cautious around humans. And so this crash of rhino is a big family, and they were mostly just feeding, but they were moving along, you know, like pretty quickly. And so we didn't have too much time to kind of stop. And that's why I was in a rush, right, of trying to, you know, grab the images, because you're just kind of moving, and you don't want to make them feel like they're being chased. And so you kind of have to predict which direction they're going to go in. And you kind of figure out how to go kind of parallel to them and kind of park in a spot where they're at the right place and the light is at the right place. And then you're constantly, you know, just moving with them as they're moving.
Well, it's hard. Yeah.
Wow.
It's got to be tricky.
I can't even take Instagram photos, dude. Like,
I know.
Just standing still, like, of myself. So I know you were saying that, in particular, that rhino shot, you were a little too zoomed in. It kind of had me thinking, are there any other moments you can think of that you missed the shot? And it would have been like such a good shot, but it just, the way the elements lined up, it just didn't work out.
Oh, it happens all the time. I'll tell you another kind of amazing wildlife experience is photographing gorillas in Rwanda. Oh, wow. So there's a place in Rwanda in Volcanoes National Park where you have to get a permit because humans are only allowed to be with the gorilla family for an hour, you know, in the day. And so you set out with with your guides, and actually they even have porters because it's a fairly steep and intense climb in the jungle. And once you find that family of gorilla, you stay with them. These are mountain gorillas, and you stay with them for an hour. And you just basically get to watch them, you know, watch them interact and everything. And one of the things that will sometimes happen is the silverback, which is kind of the head honcho of the family. If he senses, or if he's kind of probing, you know, who you are, he will kind of like, you know, stand up a bit and beat his chest and do a little bit of a show. If you're not used to that, the first time that happens, you're kind of freaking out, right? And you're like, am I doing? And so, that happened the first time I did. I actually did three treks, 3 days, you know, back to back. The very first day and the very first time that happened, you're kind of just, I was just kind of frozen in the moment and didn't, you know, wasn't really thinking about the shot to take or whatever. But if I had gotten that, it would have just been, you know, this kind of, you can even go and look, you know, there's kind of these iconic images of a gorilla doing the chest beating pose. Yeah. I did get that kind of shot, you know, the next day a little bit. It was a little bit better, with a little bit more practice, but I missed that really iconic.
How many shots are you taking on an average day like this? I went with my girlfriend on like a little trip the other week, and she has a camera. We brought like two batteries, and then like in a few hours, I mean, we were just like done with power. So like, how many batteries are you bringing as well? Like on a practical level?
Actually, no. These days, the cameras have gotten so good that the batteries aren't a problem. I basically just bring, usually for like a wildlife trip, I always bring multiple bodies. So I'll always have at least two bodies, sometimes three bodies. I'll have three bodies because I want a backup, you know, as well, you know, in case, you know, stuff happens. But even outside of the backup, I don't like changing lenses when I'm out in the field because you're out and it's dusty and there's like, you know, stuff in the air and everything. And then right. you don't want to be sitting there fiddling, you know, with lenses while all the action's happening. So, you know, I'll actually be using, you know, two cameras simultaneously. And so if I have that set up, usually I just have one extra battery and that's it. That's usually good for, you know, for the entire day. So kind of the three batteries, you know, two cameras, one extra battery, you know, that's all it takes. And so in terms of like the volume, it depends on the kind of, so I do what I call like nature photography. So that's both like landscape, abstracts, you know, stuff like that, and wildlife photography. The volume depends on the kind of photography that I'm doing. So the more like the landscape and abstract and things like that, you know, I might end up, I'm not usually, you know, taking photos, you know, in a continuous burst. Mm-hmm. So you're not sitting there like machine gun mode, you know, you know, bang, 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 bang. Because, you know, it's not moving, right? The landscape's not moving that quickly, right? And so in those cases, it's like, yeah, I might take like 100 pictures, you know, in a day, and then I'll probably whittle it down and probably get rid of, you know, 90 of them. And then I'll probably end up keeping about 10 of them. In the wildlife case, though, it's a lot more because you've got, I know you've got animals that are moving, and sometimes you'll have a mom and a cub and they'll be in.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Interactions, and you'll have just like all kinds of stuff going on, or like you're I can go to, say, again, like in Africa, and you might encounter a pack of wild dogs, like wild African dogs, which are amazingly beautiful creatures, and they're like, if they're on a hunt, they're moving all over the place and they're running and going all over, and you can end up, you know, I can end up, you know, basically taking 1,000 photos just in the span of 30 minutes, just in kind of, you know, photographing that hunt. Now, then I go back and that 1,000 photos will probably end up being about, you know, maybe 20 or 30, you know, that I'll end up keeping, because you end up, you know, deleting a lot of the ones that are, you know, that just don't work out. But yeah, it could be, you know, even 1,000 over the course of over a couple of hours. But I'll say, like, for most of my trips, for the wildlife ones, on average, I probably come back with or probably have shot about maybe 2,000 or 3,000 a day. And then I will write, you know, when I'm out there on that trip, I'll delete about maybe 3/4 of them. And so I'll end up coming back with about maybe 500 a day. And then over the course of the next couple of weeks, I'll whittle that down as well to probably until it comes down to about, you know, 200, you know, in a day. And then after it's about 200, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to delete anymore. I'll just keep them for like future reference or, you know, or other purposes.
How do you decide what photos to keep? You know, was that going to be your question, Oliver?
Or no, even, I'm just saying, like, that's a good question. That's a great question.
And even like, I mean, I know there's a selection process for like a lot of, like, you have photos on the TVs and stuff, like in Oliver's room, literally. I know that's like a different process, but for you personally, is it like an emotional aspect? Like, which one kind of speaks to you that you keep? How does that work?
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. It's an emotional aspect. So for me, so I used to be very hesitant to delete photos. So when I was first starting off, like my first, I'd say 10 years, maybe even 15 years, I would keep, I'd basically not delete anything. And so then I'd go through and kind of pick out my favorites, and then I would, you know, work, like, edit those, you know, share those. But about 5 years ago, I started working with another professional, you know, photographer. We became very good friends, and he is a ruthless deleter. And so I kind of hanging out with him, and his photos, like, are, they're so much better than mine. It's like the ones he's deleting are the ones like I'd be keeping. And so I'm kind of watching him work. I'm like, okay, like why am I hanging on to all these, all these old photos? So I've just started more just kind of ruthlessly just deleting stuff and really just hanging on to the things that, that really like mean something or they, convey something. So for example, for wildlife, I will look for often interactions, like interesting interactions. So if you've got like, a leopard, mom and a cub, and they're like walking along and they're walking on the ground and up on logs and, they'll sit and sometimes the cub will play with the mom and, you'll have captured a lot of different moments. And what I'll basically be looking for is, are there some really like interesting, captivating ones? Are there ones like, one of the things I like doing is looking for expressions that seem like human emotions. And you kind of like, and it's always fun to kind of make a little, joke or something about it. Like sometimes I'll have I think it was just my most recent, Instagram photo. I posted this photo of this bear cub that was kind of sliding down on its belly, towards the river. And you look at its face, at least I look at its face, and I'm like, yeah, that guy thinks that he's sneaking up on us, right? It's like it's kind of what you'd expect, like a 3-year-old kid that's playing with you, that's kind of playing hide and seek. Now, I know that's not exactly what the bear, was doing. And I was there, it was kind of just sliding around on its belly, but I happened to capture that moment with that kind of expression in its face. That's what it reminded me of, this kind of, like cheeky, fun, kid that's playing around. Like I'll keep pictures like that because it just kind of, it evokes that emotion. It kind of conveys a bit of the kind of behavior you might expect out of like a human child or a human, but it's not really that. And so it kind of makes for an interesting photo. It makes for an interesting thing to say, an interesting thing to share. Those are the kinds of things that appeal.
Sure. We'll for everybody listening, we're going to link Arvin's Instagram in the show notes because this bear looks exactly like Paddington Bear. It's so crazy. Like I thought it was an animation. It was so crazy. It was the expression.
Dude, was crazy. Funny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're talking about these trips, like rhino trip, gorilla trip, this last bear trip. How many countries, like big picture, how many countries have you been to and how many trips have you done that are just for photography?
A fair amount. So I've been to all 7 continents for photography. So country-wise, I don't know, probably for photography, somewhere around 20, 30, something like that. I've been back to places, multiple times. There are a few, kind of iconic places you go, for certain things. And then in terms of trips, I try to do a couple of them every year. And then I try to do some local stuff as well, like especially a lot of like coastal landscape photography and things like that in California here, where I live. The big international ones, especially the big international wildlife ones, probably a couple a year over the course of, 15 years or so. So I've probably done about, 30 or 40 trips like that.
Have you ever done a wedding before?
I have done a wedding. Really? So done actually more than one wedding. I've done a couple of weddings. And in the course of doing that, I realized that I really should stick to photographing wildlife and not photograph people. It's a very different skill set. And it's a different way of operating. It's a different kind of stress and pressure as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is when I was first starting off with photography, probably 2009, I think is when, when I did a couple of weddings and, I have not done them since. I had some friends and family even ask a couple of years later. It's like, hey, can you photograph our wedding? It's like, I'm happy to come and be a guest, and I'll snap a picture with my phone, but like, I don't want that pressure for being a wedding photographer.
Yeah, because okay, when you're photographing wildlife, the animals aren't gonna get mad if you don't get the shot,
But like, yeah, exactly.
The bride and groom probably aren't going to bite you.
Yeah, but they
I don't know. There's some, there's some crazy brides and grooms. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, let's talk about the TV. This is where I actually discovered you. Basically, like every night, I have the TV on too much and then I'm like not even watching and it's just kind of there for light. And it always goes to Google featured photos and stuff like yeah. that. And your pictures are always up there. And just night after night, I was like, okay, who is this guy? These pictures are crazy. And that's when I explored more and I like told Braden about you. And then we're like, okay, we got to get this guy on the podcast. So explain to us how you get those pictures licensed. Like, do you win competitions? Like, because so many people are seeing these photos. How do you get them there?
Yeah, it's a little bit of an anticlimactic story of how they, you know, how they got up there. So I'll tell you how they started. And okay. I don't know, you know, you guys might not remember this, but Google at one point had a social network many years ago. It was called Google Plus. That was like 2011, I think, is when, you know, when it came out. Interestingly enough, that was actually the first thing I worked on at Google. So I started Google 13 years ago. I worked on Google Plus photos. And one of the things that Google Plus was having success with was in the photography community. So there were a lot of photographers that you know, that liked it. There were photographers mm-hmm. that were using it. And we built a feature there where we built featured photos. So what actually happened was it would go and take all of the most popular photos, like the ones that got a lot of likes and, you know, had a lot of engagement, and would kind of build this you know, set of featured photos. And then as a part of that, we also had a bunch of professional photographers that we would include, you know, some of their content in there, and kind of have this, you know, featured photos thing in Google Plus. And so what happened was then when we started building the Android TV and the, you know, those Chromecast products, the things that yeah. you're using now, where, you know, it's basically it's on the screensaver, they just decided to use that set of featured photos in, you know, for, you know, for that purpose. This is how it started many, many years ago. Well, when Google Plus went away, well, there wasn't a place to get these featured photos anymore. So the team inside of Google that was responsible for that was trying to figure out, well, what do we do here? We had, you know, we used to get all these great photos that, like, kind of, you know, normal people would take. And, you know, they'd be great photos. They're not like your, you know, things that are in your, you know, galleries and museums and things like that. They have some set of images for that too. And what the team decided to do is, hey, wait a second. Like we're Google. We actually, you know, we have a lot of employees. And it turns out that we have a lot of employees that love photography and that are actually really good at photography. So why don't we just ask our employees, if they want to submit their photos. And that's what they started doing. So they started doing this probably was about 10 years ago. And so every year they go and they put out a call and basically say, anybody, you know, in the company, submit your photos. And then they have a whole like jury and panel, and they figure, I don't know how the mechanics of that works, but they go and figure out, well, which ones are we going to take and add to our collection of featured photos. And so I've just been lucky enough that so every year when it comes along, I submit a bunch of new photos, you know, into it. And I've been lucky to have, you know, a bunch of my photos selected for it.
Wait, so does it reset every year?
No, I think they just keep adding to the the collection. I think they keep adding, and I don't know if they remove any of the really old ones to get kind of, you know, freshness in there, but I know they definitely keep adding.
No, I think that's a cool story though, Arvin. I think that, like, yeah. it's kind of like you're the guy, you know? I mean, like, that's pretty cool. It's like exclusive photos only, you know?
So yeah, it kind of links the two jobs.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
I'm sure you were like super hyped about that. It's kind of like, I mean, it goes back to what you were saying, like Google kind of pays for your hobby of photography, you know?
It does. And actually the link gets, so for me, like photography and my professional career has been linked for a long time. So before I joined Google, I used to work in Adobe. I've worked on Photoshop. I've worked on Lightroom. Uh-huh. And so then done kind of a bunch of like photo related stuff in a professional capacity, I know, at Adobe. And then when I came to Google, like I said, I joined Google Plus Photos at first, but then when that was going away, I ended up kind of co-founding Google Photos with a bunch of folks, and basically helped build that product. So, you know, did that for my first 6 years, and that was, you know, that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun kind of being a serious photographer, you know, outside of work, and then going into work and building this, you know, this photos product that's the home for, you know, for all of your photos, And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a great time. Got to work with the Nick Software, you know, people when Google acquired that company. And that's like a professional set of plugins for, you know, Photoshop, Lightroom, Snapseed, you know, came out of that. So, you know, was responsible for that, you know, for some amount of time. So it was, yeah, it was a lot of fun combining the two those years.
So when you, I don't know how much, like, if you're even allowed to talk about this, like the process behind, like when you first got involved with Google Plus, it's like, is it kind of like, what's that movie, Oliver, that we watched that,
are you talking about Social Network?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I also want to know what happened to Google Plus. I'm going to be honest. I don't really know what it is.
It sounds awesome, but yeah. Yeah.
You guys, you guys might be too young to remember that era, but yeah, Google Plus was, Google's response, yeah, really to Facebook, you know. So Facebook started blowing up at the, in kind of the mid 2000s, late 2000s. And I think Google felt like, hey, like we needed, there's a lot of people that are going into this social network product, and there's a lot of engagement that's happening there. And, you know, we want to build something like that, you know, for ourselves. And so it was an attempt to go do that. And it didn't really, you know, in spite of the actual product, the features, the capabilities, they were pretty awesome. It was pretty slick. But it turns out it's really hard to build a brand new like social product where you have to kind of pull in all of your friends.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
And contacts into it, you know, from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't really, you know, catch on, and then, you know, kind of fizzled out by 2013, 2014. I think it was 2014.
When did you guys acquire YouTube? Did that kind of replace it in a sense as like somewhat of a social network?
I think maybe in hindsight now you could say that, but no, but YouTube, Google acquired YouTube in 2006, I believe.
Okay. So pretty early.
Yeah, it was cool. Pretty early. Yeah.
The movie I was thinking about was The Internship. How accurate is Google to The Internship?
It's a good question.
It's definitely a dramatization, right? So I mean, okay. it's like anything else you might, you know, it's like how accurate is I don't know, like the Pit or ER or your, you know, Grey's Anatomy, right? To working in a hospital. Yeah. Right. You know, there's elements of it that's probably true, but there's, you know, there's other things that are, you know, that are exaggerations. But I think there's aspects of it that kind of capture a lot of the essence, maybe, of what it was like, you know, to work at Google, especially in that era then, which was, I think, a different era to where a lot of the big tech companies are now. But yeah, I think the, you know, essence-wise, kind of the fun, like, you know, the camaraderie, you know, building stuff, you know, together, kind of challenging the status quo. All of those things are, yeah, that's kind of what it's like.
Have you ever used the NapPod?
I think once, yeah. I don't think it was in the office here. Nice. I think it was in one of our other offices.
Every day, dude.
Well, it's just like you think you will, and then, you know, your day is just so busy. But no, but I think I used it in I was visiting one of our other offices, I think like our Zurich office or something like that, and I was jet lagged and tired, and so you're like, okay, I just got to go like duck into this thing for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard when you got stuff to do, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you said you're leaving again. Like, we'll venture back into photography. I believe you said you're leaving again soon to travel. Is that correct?
I'm going to be heading to Egypt actually next week.
Oh, wow.
That's a new one for me. That's not a wildlife trip. It's a culture. It's a culture photography trip.
Awesome.
When you go to a place like that, do you go in kind of with a picture in your head that you want to get, or do you kind of just show up and see what happens?
No, it's a mix of both. So I will do research on, you know, on the places. I don't like to look at too much of other people's work because I don't want to just go and just capture kind of the same image, you know, that others have gotten. But I'll do a little bit of research to have an idea of kind of like what's there, what do I want to do, you know, what are the things I want to check out, like what times of day I might want to check them out, what are some maybe concepts, you know, I might look for. And then it's a mixture of like, of kind of taking then what happens, you know, kind of being, you know, having a bit of serendipity to it. So like, I know I'm going to go to a camel market. That's been arranged in one of the days. And I kind of have an idea of like, okay, you're going to go to a camel market. They're going to have a lot of camels coming in. Camels are going to be dusty. And so there's a bit of an idea of like, of, you know, what kind of images, you know, that I might want to make. Do I want to do abstracts of, you know, of, you know, the cow, just say body parts, you know, of the camel? Do I want to take, you know, pictures of the whole thing? Do I want to see if I can figure out how to kind of position it against the light? I know there's going to be a bunch of visits to temples, to pyramids. I think then we might even be able to get some camels to come to the pyramids. And so, yeah, you know, there's probably an idea of like, there's probably a shot that I think I want to get that's going to involve, you know, a couple of camels in front of pyramids or in front of temples. Yeah. I kind of have an idea of roughly the set of things to do. But then apart from that, you just got to take it and see kind of, you know, what inspires you when you're there.
Dude, it would be kind of cool if you could get like the proportions right, so that you can make it look like a camel was sitting on top of a pyramid. You know what I mean? So like,
so dude, that is so hard. Far away.
No, it'd be hard, but it's like, I guess like you have to get the camel mid sit, which would be kind of one of those moments where it's like rapid fire. I don't know. I'm just scheming. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? I'm pyramid scheming.
I know. And that's the thing. That's the kind of thing. Like if you wanted to pull that off, you know, you have to get down low, you know, get far, get a telephoto lens, you know, kind of compress things a little bit. And then like, you have an idea of that kind of image you might want to make. Sometimes you just got to wait, right? And so like you said, mm-hmm. you know, you might have to catch a camel mid-sit. And so then you notice, so part of it is that you might get to the camel market. You might notice that, oh, well, they come in from over here and then they walk this way. So if that was an image that I wanted to make, I might say, okay, I think I've seen a bunch of them come in. They kind of walk this way and then they kind of sit down here. So if I position myself here and, you know, have this as the background, and then I just wait, right? And then you just kind of try it and see if you can do it. So yeah, that's exactly how it works.
Would you say you're pretty like laid back during these trips, or I don't want to say like stressed out, but maybe like,
I feel like it'd be stressful.
I would always, yeah, I'd be like, I need to get my shot. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and then like, if you're only taking bad photos, then you're going to be like, shoot, like I still need to get a good one. And
why am I even here?
There's a range of emotions and kind of states of mind that you go through, you know, on these trips. And so it takes me a couple of days to get into kind of the headspace of like being creative and being like a photographer. Because when I'm not on the trip, I'm doing a bunch of like, you know, computer stuff and team stuff and whatever, right? So you're not in the like I'm creating art zone. And so that takes a couple of days. And sometimes like I'll go on a trip and like, man, the first day will just kind of be a bust. You're just like, you're just having a hard time just kind of getting into the groove, getting into the zone of it. But then after a couple of days, you really start kind of, you know, it's like just like you're kind of in a state of flow when it comes to that, you know, to the photography. And the reason why I like the dedicated trips is I don't combine the photography trips with like any other vacations or anything like that. Yeah. Like when I'm doing the trip, photography is what I'm doing. I'm shooting during the day. when I'm not shooting, I'm downloading images, mm-hmm. going through them, culling them, getting rid of them, I'm editing. Like it is the, I'm in that zone of kind of creating images. And so what happens is you do that and then you start getting into that, into that zone. And eventually it's almost like in every trip, I'll reach a point of satisfaction where it's just like, man, I'm good. I've gotten a bunch of really great images. I've gotten stuff I haven't seen before. And like, I'm feeling really good. That's point of satisfaction is when it's like, and sometimes I'll have a couple of days left, over still. I'll still have a few more days left. I'll be like, this is great. Everything else now is just gravy. It's a bonus. This trip has already been worthwhile for, everything I thought I was going to get. And then, you come to the end of it and you're good. So that's been kind of how most of the trips go. There's a few of them where it's just frustrating because the conditions just aren't working out, like the weather's not working out, or the sightings are just not working mm-hmm. out. That tends to be rare, but even in those situations, I just kind of feel like, it's either this or I'm sitting in the office working. And so, I'm out here in Africa or Antarctica or the Arctic or wherever. I'm still having fun. So I don't find it stressful.
It's a good attitude, yeah.
For sure. So this is kind of just like a little random tidbit. All of this is serious. And I really think that you could help out the audience here. If you could give like a beginner photographer 3 tips about photography, what do you think they would be?
3 tips. Okay. So tip 1 is experiment and try everything. So for me, I've done all kinds of, like I told you, I did weddings, right? Yeah. you learn, right? That's an experiment. Uh-huh. So experiment and try everything. Tip 2 is don't sweat the gear as much. Like everybody gets into the gear obsession. If all you got is a phone, use a phone. You can make, great images like just with a phone. If you've got, the cheap camera that your mother gave you, great. Just go use that. So don't sweat that. This is not gonna make you a better photographer. Kodak EasyShare, go for it. It's amazing. You can still make great pictures with it. And then let's see, tip 3. It's kind of going back to the first one. You want to experiment and try everything, but I think as you're doing that, try to figure out what you want to say with your images. Because the thing that I think a lot of beginners, and I fall into this trap too, is you're just kind of out, because the two things are kind of polar opposites of each other. So when you're experimenting, you're kind of taking pictures of everything, right? Everything, everywhere, all the time. But just doing that isn't necessarily always going to be helpful. And so what you want to do is, in the process of doing that, you want to start to figure out, what's my thing? What is, and that might be a style, that might be a point of view, that might be a particular way that, that you see stuff, whatever that is. You want to try to kind of figure out what, your thing is. What are you trying to say? And then experiment within that and try different things, within right. that. And that's how you kind of start to develop a body of work that, that's not just kind of a random, collection of images.
That's great advice. And Braden, that was a great question. I like that question.
Thank you. I got another banger.
Okay.
It honestly could be stupid. We'll see. But how do you feel about filters?
Ooh.
Wait, what kind of filters?
Not lens filters, right, Braden? You're talking
about like... No. Like the Snapchat like dog.
Instagram filters?
No, I'm just joking. No, like after in post.
Yeah, vivid warm, like that.
Coco. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, I feel the same way about it that I feel about AI, which is it's just a tool, right? And so if vivid warm or whatever, sepia cool, it helps to convey the thing that you want to convey, go forward and use it. In fact, I think I've used filters very rarely. And sometimes I will just try it, right? And go and swipe and try it. And I'm like, I'm trying it. I'm like, yeah. And sometimes I'll run across something where I'll be like, ooh, actually, that looks kind of cool. And I might not apply it. I might go back and because I kind of have an idea of how like those filters work. I'd be like, I like that, but maybe I don't want it as strong. Maybe I want to change, you know, that tint a little bit. And then I'll go back to my tools and I'll try to use it. So look, filters are just, you know, they're just a tool like anything else. If it helps you to convey the thing you want to convey, go for it. Use it.
Do you have a Google phone or an iPhone?
I have both. I literally dual carry.
Kevin Gage over here.
and I have both because when I started working on photos on Google Photos, Google Photos is available for the iPhone and for all Android devices. So I started carrying, you know, two phones with me all the time. In fact, I'm carrying two phones with me, you know, right now in my pockets. And so ever since, I've always, you know, carried both. And the other thing for me is I love technology. I love how technology can be used to, like, you know, to express ourselves, to tell stories, to like make people's lives better, like all of those things. And I'm generally like a techno optimist. And so I kind of like to keep tabs on everything, you know, that's going on out there.
Which one do you think takes better photos?
I think it changes almost year by year. And it also depends on which lens you're using on those phones. So,
it's
complicated now, right? So like sometimes, you know, there's one phone where the main camera, you know, will take a better photo, but then in the other phone, the telephoto, you know, will take a better photo. So it all depends. And they're constantly leapfrogging each other too.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Yeah,
so that's the other thing.
What do you think about the 0.5 setting on the phone? Because like lots of people, especially girls, will be like, don't use 0.5. It makes me look stupid, whatever. I think it's pretty cool, like being able to capture that much of like a place with 0.5.
So the 0.5 setting, it's the same as like as when you first get an ultra wide angle lens, mm-hmm. like when you're using like a big camera and you get like an ultra wide or like a fisheye lens or something, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, it can feel like you want to take every photo with it, but I look at it again the same way as filters, the same way with like, is it actually helping you or is it hurting you in the thing in whatever it is that you're trying to do with it. So for me, I use my phone to like record moments and memories. So I'm not usually using my phone for my kind of professional photography. I have a bunch of other, you know, professional gear for that, but I use it for like, again, like recording moments and memories. So I'll use the 0.5 when I'm trying to like record a really big space and it's, you know, it's relevant. So I think I used it once. I was photographing some family. It was in a restaurant or a cafe that we were in that had a ton of just beautiful flower bouquets everywhere, right? And so I took one photo at the with the normal, you know, 1x lens, and it's like, okay, and that's okay. You've got a person, you've got a few flowers around them, but then you punch out to that 0.5, And as long as you're careful to put the person in the middle mm-hmm. of the frame yeah. so that they don't get all distorted, then you get this, like, you know, this huge swath of all of these flowers that are in it. And that's a really cool photo. So, you know, it's got a purpose.
Yeah. Okay. I got another kind of crazy question. This is completely unrelated to phones, but I think it'd be really cool if you did it. Have you ever considered underwater photography?
I have. Well, so I am open water certified. So okay. I can oh. technically go diving. I have considered it. I haven't done it. Mostly because it's just, you know, I've been busy with all the stuff, yeah, you know, maybe. Above water. It's a, there's a lot of common skills. I have friends who are some serious underwater photographers. Actually, I have a friend who does not, so there's kind of two kinds of underwater photography. So you can basically go full scuba, the full gear. You actually need lights as well because it gets pretty dark, you know, down there. Mm-hmm. And you can go and there's incredible photographs you can take. But I have a friend who he actually runs tours for people where they do like shallow diving photography. Okay. So you're not in like a full, you know, like breathing apparatus and, you know, BCDs and everything. Instead, you're kind of close to the surface and you're diving and swimming with whales in particular. And he's got just incredible photos of, you know, of whales, like shooting down at whales, going down and then kind of looking up, you know, at whales, stingray, wow. you know, things like that. So he wow. keeps telling me, and now I'm gonna get in trouble. I'm gonna get in trouble because he's gonna watch this and he's gonna be like, dude, I've been asking you to come with me for yep. years now. I gotta go do it. I gotta take him up now. On that.
Yeah, it'd be such a learning curve probably though, but like you should totally do it. Don't you think it'd be a little bit way different, like the lighting and everything?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's a different kind of challenge. But and, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of really photography is you can go do these things.
Yeah, and well, what I think is cool about underwater photography is that one thing about photography in general, especially the stuff you've done, is like showing people things that they've never got to see, like these incredible yeah. landscapes or incredible animals. That's a whole nother level once you're underwater. Like 99% of people are never going to be able to see that. So like taking high quality photos of it is so impactful probably.
I think you're right. I mean, you guys are making me feel bad. I got to go. I got to go talk to my buddy. I got to be like, okay, man, you know, Oliver and Braden are making me, want to come on a trip with you.
Dude, yeah. No, I mean, your photos still capture that idea, though, where it's like, well, I mean.
Yeah, that was my first example. Yeah, of course.
Right. But there is something about, like, I'm on land right now, so there's still a chance I might run into a bear or, like, a camel or
yeah.
you know, something. But it's like a whale, I doubt it, you know? But,
yeah, I don't know. All right. As a smart guy. You were in computer science, right? Okay. You don't have to answer this. We ask a lot of our guests this question. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but do you think the moon landing was real from a computer science standpoint?
From a computer science, I mean, I think the moon landing was real mostly from a social standpoint of, you know, people are terrible at keeping secrets. And so, you know, that many okay. people keeping that kind of secret, that's not how humans work. All right. It's like, you know, people can't even keep a simple secret. So I think from that sense, I think it was real. From a computer science perspective. Yeah, sure. You know, why not? It's actually pretty amazing. The level to which I think we take for granted a lot of the tools and technologies, you know, that we have. And you start scratching the surface of how some of the stuff works and you get into it and you're like, holy cow, like it is like, it's really cool that somebody, you know, figured this out. And then because they figured it out, you know, like we have this thing now. And like the example that comes to mind was just the other day, I don't know why I was sitting there. I'm like, MRI machines. How do they, I've had a few MRIs done. Like, how do they work? And so I use Gemini and I go on there. I'm like, yeah, describe to me how it works. And it tells me everything about magnets and superconductors. And I'm like, who discovered this? How'd they figure this out? It goes all the way back to this guy in 1911, figured out this whole superconductor thing. And because of that, you can have these big, powerful magnets. And because of that, they can see inside of you. And so, but then now, you have a pain or you injure yourself in some way, you just go to a hospital and then they stick you in this machine and out comes and there's a picture, you take that, for granted. And so I use that as an example to say that, there's so much that we have that have this kind of complex problems that we've solved. I'm like, yeah, totally. I can believe that, especially with what we're capable of, as a country, we put our minds to it. Yeah, we sent guys to the moon. I think it's totally doable. I think it's done.
Fair enough. Our podcast has a lot of entrepreneur like type listeners. That's kind of what we do. We have people that have started something on here. As someone who works at Google and in tech with pretty much zero barrier to entry now for creating a company, especially with AI and all this, what is some advice you have? Or also, do you think it's doable now? Or is it reasonable? Is there still things that haven't been done? Because sometimes we have these conversations where we're like, oh, we could do this. And then we're like, oh, but that's been done. Or it's been tried and all this.
I'll say two things. So one, yes, it is totally doable. In fact, there's never been a better time to go do stuff, to go build stuff. I say this to my teams at Google that everything that's going on with AI, what it's really doing is it's empowering the builders. It's democratizing the ability to build stuff. So you know, 5 or 10 years ago, if you had an idea for something that you wanted to go and build and try, and you were not a computer scientist, you didn't know, how to write code, or you didn't have a technical background to go and understand it, you would have to find a co-founder. You'd have to go convince somebody to come and build that thing with you. You don't need to do that now. I was talking to the CEO of this startup and she had this idea for women's health that she wanted to go and do. She was not technical and she built her product and took it out to paying customers without a technical co-founder. And I think that's amazing, right? So all you need is an idea. It's not just all you need is an idea, but you need a product that's gonna resonate with people. And as long as you have the ability to be able to refine your product and be able to take that feedback and know how to make it really work for some kind of problem that someone's trying to solve, sky's the limit. It's an awesome time, to go build stuff and to go, go try stuff and to go do it. And then the second thing I'll say is, just because somebody tried it before and failed doesn't mean that you might not be successful now, because there's a lot of different reasons why a particular idea or a concept might not have worked then that suddenly, it can work now. Sometimes that idea, it was just too early. Sometimes the market's not ready for it. Sometimes whoever built that didn't market it correctly, didn't tell people what problem it solved for them, correctly. So there's all kinds of reasons why, it might not have worked. So, you kind of have to, if you have an idea for something and you're doing some research and you find out, oh yeah, somebody else tried this a couple of years ago and it didn't work, you really want to go try to understand the why of it, right? Get into it, see if you can dust that thing off and try it. And then try to figure out, what's potentially, what assumptions were they making of the industry they were in, the market, their customer, their user, all of those things. And do those assumptions still hold today, right? So if somebody tried something, say, in 2020, well, we had a pandemic going on and, conditions were very different then. So conditions are different now. And same thing for whatever area you might pick. So just try stuff.
Got it. That's great advice. Yeah, thank you for that. I think the listeners are going to find that super helpful as well.
Yeah. Well, and for us too. We're always looking to create something, start our own little
Yeah.
A little business or something. And
that's a whole brand.
I agree. Yeah. It's never really been easier than now. And it's like, it's motivating, you know, that it's so doable. And Oliver, you were saying, literally yesterday we were talking about this, having this conversation. It's going to come down to marketing, really, because you have all these competitors, everybody's able to make something. It's like, how do you get the target market to see your product over everybody else's, you know? So it's like, we got to shift our focus in different areas. I feel like that's a change we're gonna have to make, you know, but yeah. Real quick, can we do the AI or real segment, Oliver?
We have some pictures. Some pictures that we want to show you. I think we just have two for each one. We have one of animals and one of a landscape. And you're going to look at both and tell us which one is the real one.
Oh,
and
boy, dangerous. Okay.
And we promise you that one is the real one.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, first up, this is the first photo. This is the second photo.
Kind of a bad second photo.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's go back up top. Oh, this is hard.
Yeah, I honestly...
We're kind of cheating them here. I promise you the second question is easier than this one.
Okay, I'm going to go with the first one's AI and the second one's...
Oh, you're right.
You nailed it.
Genius.
Dude, I was looking at these, I probably would have said the opposite just because of like how faded out looks over here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heavily filtered.
The first one looks so good, yeah.
Sometimes it's like 50-50, right?
Okay. All right, real or AI?
That looks like AI to me.
All right, then we got this.
Okay, yeah. That could be AI as well, that like given how good AI is. Right. But yeah, I think that of the two, of course, that one's real. Yeah.
All right, yeah. That was a gimme pick. And I guess we only had two. So you nailed it 100%. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It was 50-50, right? So.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you want to say to the listeners out there, just to end it for us?
This has been great. I just go back to what I said. Keep if you're a photographer, keep photographing. I also think it's never been a better time to be a photographer. Either. I know there's a lot of folks worried about is AI going to obviate the need for photographers? I don't think it is. I think it's actually going to make people appreciate the work that the humans do. So it's a great time to be a photographer. It's a great time to be an entrepreneur, to be a builder, to build stuff. So go out and do it.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. That was the greatest photographer in the world, Arvind Krishnaswamy. And he doesn't do weddings, so do not try to get him to do your wedding.
He's gonna do my wedding. All right.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Colmena Seguros presenta una historia imparable.
Cuando uno de mis trabajadores sufrió un accidente en la empresa, sentí miedo. Pensaba en él, en su familia y en todo lo que podía pasar. Pero la verdad, ese miedo duró poco, porque Colmena Seguros estuvo a nuestro lado, guiándonos y acompañándonos para que la recuperación fuera más rápida. Hoy mi empresa sigue adelante, con la tranquilidad y respaldo de Colmena.
Colmena Seguros, la aseguradora de las empresas que no paran de salir adelante.
Vigilado Superintendencia Financiera de Colombia. Colmena Seguros, una empresa de Fundación Grupo Social.